again, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 233 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, with you as always, and this week we have a slightly different episode because, unfortunately, my regular co-hosts are unavailable, so it's just me this week. We haven't done a solo podcast before. I'm not sure how well it's going to work out. I certainly hope that people enjoy my voice, because that's all you're going to hear this week. Totally experimental, but did want to get a podcast out for you, even though my regular co-hosts, Ben and Kenny, Arcane and Kenny, of course, are not available. Did want to get a show out this week, so let's give it a try. And before we dive into some of the news of the past week, just wanted to reiterate an announcement I posted on the front page over the weekend about the wish lists for NBA Live 19 and NBA 2K19. Basically, with the wish lists, we want to send through our best, most constructive feedback to the development teams at EA Sports and Visual Concepts. We want to send through good feedback that really gets to the nub of all the matters, all the issues that we're having with the game. We don't want to send in ranty, lengthy, long-winded rants about the game and how much we hate it or whatever. Certainly, we don't want to hold back and sugarcoat anything, but we do want to send in detailed feedback on the what we want to see from gameplay, game modes, bugs that are really prominent, the bugs that really haven't been fixed by any of the official updates as yet. Basically, all that stuff is useful, and we want to send that through to the development teams. As always, when we do the wish lists, I want to remind people not to post things like, oh, make the gameplay better, or make Dynasty Mode better, make Franchise My League better, etc. I mean, we want to see the modes and gameplay get better, but explain how you want to see them get better, because otherwise it just doesn't tell the developers anything. It's much like a mod in our community saying, oh, we'll make that mod better, but if you're not really explaining what you don't like or what the problems you're having with it, it doesn't really give you constructive feedback or useful feedback that you can put to good use. So, yeah, get involved with those wish lists. We do want to get them in ASAP. Obviously, NBA Live 19 and NBA 2K19 are in pre-production at the moment. We want to get the feedback in while it can still be useful. So over the next couple of weeks, I'll be posting some reminders on social media and in the forum and probably on the main page as well, one or two at least, just to remind everyone to get involved with the wish lists. The more people we get involved, the more we can do a cross-section of what the community wants. As I said in the wishlist threads, basically if you want to give the top 15 to 20 wishes that you have for the game, the your most pressing suggestions and ideas for the game, or if you want to do a top 5 to 10 in different categories, again, gameplay, specific game modes, online, etc., and just general, and maybe a section for far-out ideas if you have them, however you want to do it, basically we want to prioritize the feedback and make sure that EA and 2K know what we really want out of the games. So with that being said, let's get to some news this week. Patch 1.10 was released for NBA Live 18, so the 10th patch that has come through was a smaller update than we've seen before. It's actually mostly fixing some online issues, so some technical issues with online, addressing some latency issues, latency burst control, online improve internet latency and jitter handling. In live run, it's improved, fixed an issue with too few players, detecting when there's too few players. Now when you make a private to public lobby, you're more likely to pick up random users. Other bug fixes include fixed a crash in live events. Fairly straightforward patch notes here, not particularly detailed, but we do have patch notes this time. Idle users being kicked, the time has moved from 5 minutes to 48 seconds, so people just can't idle out and ruin the experience for other people. And it's also changes to starting lineups that do not change or take effect in gameplay when changing the starting lineup in play now. That was a bug that was affecting after that update came through, that bug occurred where you would try to change the starting lineup before a play now game and it just wasn't taking effect. I haven't actually tested that one out, but that is apparently fixed, so that is definitely good news. And also under general updates, made general stability fixes and improvements. I have played the game, quite a few games with Ultimate Team and online, since patch 1.10 came out. It was a pretty smooth experience online, which is probably smoother than I've had, which has been nice when we teamed up for some games, the NLSC squad. I posted, I tweeted a few screenshots out from that, and that was fun. Might talk about that a little bit later, in my week in basketball gaming, since it's just me. But it is, the game is still feeling pretty good. It feels like it's gotten slightly better throughout the year with the, well, in some cases significantly better throughout the year with the patches. As of the latest patch, it does seem like there's a few more variations in gameplay. Teams taking more outside shots and posting up, running pick and rolls rather than just trying to drive in every play. Still, there's not as much differentiation as I'd like to see, but yeah, it does seem that they've made some tweaks and that they were applied to Ultimate Team as well as Play Now and online as well. So it's great. It's good to see the game evolving that way. Still a lot of room for improvement, obviously, but again, nice to see that the updates are still coming through and those tweaks are being made, possibly on some slider suggestions. Once again, if you do have any slider suggestions, feel free to take that discussion to the forum and share the sliders that you're having luck with. Of course, they don't apply to the One games or online games, but if you're a franchise gamer or an Ultimate Team, of course, if you're Play Now or in franchise, certainly, where you've got all the sliders available to you and you want to share a good set, by all means, do that. So patch 1.10 out now. If it's should definitely have got it for both PlayStation 4 and Xbox One at this point, unless you haven't fired up your console over the past week. That came out on January 17th, that one. So any issues, of course, you can feel free to take the discussion to the forum once again and share your impressions with your fellow gamers. Moving on to NBA 2K18 now. There's an interesting topic was posted, or a post made rather, over on Reddit. It was shared in the forum by Sticky Fingers. Shout out to Sticky Fingers for posting that in the forum. I know you've said in the forum, actually, you don't listen to the podcast, but shout out to you anyway. And the post is by Nick Blood AU, who's a former developer on a content developer and storyline writer for EVE Online. And basically, the post, which is titled "The MMOification of NBA 2K and the Perils of Ignoring Player Retention: Thoughts from a Former MMO Developer," goes into some of the things that we've been talking about for the past, well since NBA 2K18 was released, about the microtransactions, the general approach to the neighborhood, and generally 2K's attitude with the way the game has been going with the career experience and the connected modes. And it's a great write-up from somebody who is in the industry, has a lot of insight into how it all works and how developers can go wrong as far as treating their customers badly and not really focusing on the right way to approach player retention. And that's a big part of what he is talking about. And mentions that he feels that asserts and is gives quite good evidence that the game is moving towards the MMO model, especially with the neighborhood feature, the placement of parks inside the game world, and it's more lucrative, as he points out, because there's more things that you can spend real money on, whether it's upgrading your player or getting that extra money to buy cosmetic items, and it mentions pushing away from a single player game model where a one time purchase is all the player needs to fully enjoy a game. And going towards this, the microtransaction-driven MMO model. Touches on the possibility of it being a subscription-based or having financial models that draw most of their money from, you know, the quote-unquote recurrent customer spending, which is the nomenclature that they're using, and argues that we may all be already be arriving at this model with NBA 2K18. But the interesting thing is he notes that the model only works if the player base supports it long-term, noting if overall user count drops after the launch dates, as it has done with MMOs, the model simply fails, and then the game does, and sometimes can even take the studio with it. Obviously, 2K and Take-Two is in a pretty good position, especially with all the money that GTA has made, but Jim Sterling has pointed this out in many of his recent videos, that the bubble could easily burst on this, especially with the backlash that's headed up, especially with Battlefront 2 with EA Sports. And certainly you look at, there's been a big backlash against 2K18, and it's not just been haters or NBA Live fanboys or people just looking to be biased and trash the game for no reason. Hardcore fans are feeling really turned off and saying, well, you know, we feel screwed over after all the loyalty we've shown to the brand. Talks about how it's important, obviously, for player retention, how really it comes down to goodwill. And there's a paragraph that jumps out to me, which I'll read. Visual Concepts, 2K, and Take-Two have done little in this latest release to demonstrate that they understand the importance of player retention. Their approach is, if anything, downright contemptuous of players and hostile towards new players. It is, if anything, anti-retention. Their latest title, NBA 2K18, is a naked and brazen grab for short-term financial gain without consideration of the potential long-term downsides. It's, I guess, pretty harsh, but certainly a lot of truth in that. And we've talked about that, the lack of goodwill, the token reducing of haircut prices, things like that. But the way in the app, in the MyNBA 2K app, how the rewards used to be much higher, how they've been nerfed, and you can log in every day, get 100 VC. 100 VC doesn't really go very far. You can push through a card game, which personally I'm not a fan of. You know, it's a okay concept, but I don't find it very fun to have to play through just to get some token amount of, I think it's 1,000 VC a day. So I'm not sure the exact 1,500 to 2,000 VC, I think, is the max you can get at the moment out of the app a day, something around that. It's less than it used to be, and it's a chore. It's just not as fun as it used to be. So all that, and of course, the approach of the neighborhood, which we've talked about in many previous podcasts, with the lack of goodwill, it doesn't really go against the idea of getting people to keep wanting to play the game and happily pay it because the mechanics are often getting in the way of fun. That's been a big complaint this year, obviously. Also notes, interestingly, and I hadn't really thought about it, but it's absolutely true, the 2K ones featured in-depth tutorials and practice modes that encourage players to engage and invest time. This is, I'm reading again directly from the post, in the games to improve. Notes how it made it easier for players to create new builds. Back in the day, you could really create a lot of players. Going back far enough, you could create them with different appearances as well, not so much now. And try different things to freshen things up and promote long-term engagement. And notes that these aren't as in the case anymore. And suggests they can only hurt them in the long run. And the example he gives is practicing the jump shot in my court, because you've got to chase the ball around the court, which slows the process down. And you've actually got to get to 92 overall. That's what he's written. I haven't double-checked that, actually. But you've really got to grind up and be a long way on the road to 99. To actually get a ball machine for your MyCourt, which would make it easy to practice, as he says, something as fundamental as a jump shot. And so also mentions, consider the tutorial modes that previous iterations of this title ship with, where you could practice a specific move and the game would provide feedback on whether you managed to pull it off. I'm thinking of the training camp in NBA 2K12. I thought that was a great feature, very underrated. If you were still coming to grips with 2K's controls, as I was at the time, coming from live to 2K's approach with ISO Motion, I found those very, very helpful. And without those, certainly it's a bit alienating towards new players. And I think this is a telling sentence here. Instead of creating a better experience for new players, the game creators seem to be pushing hard in the exact opposite direction by focusing on the game's elite, cozying up to YouTubers who play at an elite level, as opposed to YouTubers who create game tutorials. Another example of this is their promotion allocation of significant resources towards things like the new E-League, as opposed to putting those same resources and energy into refining the gameplay and broadening its appeal by making it more friendly and accessible to new players. And I think that is absolutely true. I'm just seeing if there's any other... I did post about this in the forum, again, the thread by Sticky Fingers. Just seeing if there's anything else I wanted to highlight. The lack of matchmaking online gameplay modes. And again, this goes back to things that we've talked about in the podcast before, especially in regards to 2K Pro-Am. There is a lack of matchmaking compared to games like, say, Rocket League, where you're matched up on skills. There's much more, a greater variety of tiers that you can be in, and divisions that it'll match you up based on your skill level, how many games you've won, and by winning and losing each week, you can go up and down in the ranks, and it'll and obviously there are people who tank their ratings and so forth, which is not exactly sportsmanlike, but it is what it is. But the matchmaking in 2K Pro-Am is very broad. You've got the amateur, pro, and elite tiers. It will try and find a game within the same tier. But sometimes if you can't get a game within the tier at a time, it will just put you up or down, up a level or down a level or whatever. If you're pro, like the NLSC squad is at the moment, you may get the amateur team sometimes, and other times you will get the elite teams if you just can't find an opponent on the pro tier. And the problem is that people, whenever they disband and start a new squad in Pro-Am, you can have very experienced players presenting themselves as amateurs, basically. So it's you're not necessarily getting the fair matchup because it's now based on this brand new squad that's pretending to be a brand new squad, but is really a more experienced squad with very experienced players and cheesy builds and whatnot. So it's there isn't that consistent matchmaking where you're constantly matched up with players of the same skill level, and as Nick Blood AU notes in his post, it hurts player retention in the end because without those mechanisms to balance out the competitive nature and the different levels of competition, it's alienating to new players, and players just simply give up because they don't have that environment to get better, to learn by playing against people of the same skill level. And of course, there are people who play more casually. And referring back to Rocket League again, you have both the general, more casual online setting, and then you have competitive play. So if you just want to play some online games that are less competitive, not taking it seriously, you still try and win, obviously, and still try and play well, but they're not on the... They don't go towards your competitive ranking. They're just basically online exhibitions. You can do that and just play more casually, or you can play competitive, which will go towards your ranking and which determines the matchmaking. Nothing like that in 2K. And considering that they are doing the NBA 2K League, they're doing an esports approach with 2K Pro-Am, it's kind of a missed opportunity. Of course, there's no matchmaking in the park at all, aside from going up to a court and seeing who's on the court and how many games they've won and what they're rated overall, and wondering, okay, well, can we take these guys or can we not? So, and of course, you're kind of limited to the number of courts that are there in the playground in the park. So you just have to take what you get, and it's not always a great experience. And if you listen to recent podcasts where we've felt that there hasn't been that balance there this year in 2K18, so with no balance and no matchmaking and no balance in the matchmaking, it's been a very alienating experience. So it's a very illuminating post in many ways. It's a longer post. It's not a particular. It's not a 5,000 word essay or anything, but it's definitely a great comprehensive post about some of the problems with this approach, this MMOification of NBA 2K. It's great to hear it from somebody who has worked in the industry, has a great insight into these things, saw problems with games and companies really affected by not taking the right approach. And Kenny has said this on previous podcasts and in articles and so forth and in the forum. We've reiterated it many times, but no one is too big to fail, basically. And 2K is in a great spot now, but seeing some of the decisions they've made with 2K18 and what could happen in the future, it's not necessarily promising. I'm trying to remain more optimistic about it, as I've said in previous shows. But it's, yeah, reading this, it's not necessarily promising about the direction of at least my career. I mean, I think there's always going to be the My League modes. I think my team is always going to be fine. My League and my GM and my team always pretty solid and not really affected by this problem. But certainly this is a big area of focus. And again, it does take focus away from balancing the game out for the single player experience or even other online experiences such as my team. Again, as noted in the Reddit thread, that you can be matched up, there's no matchmaking in my team either, so for the online games there, you're not necessarily getting matched up against somebody with a similar type of team, a similar collector level, someone who's got a much stronger team and or different experience. So you really, all these things that really should be in the game to balance it out and make sure that it's not alienating the new players and that it's got this fun, balanced experience that encourages people to really get into it. We actually did try to play some Playground over the weekend and just found it just wasn't a fun experience partly because of some gameplay issues, but again, just the lack of matchmaking. Or you go into the park and you matched up against people who are much more they live in the park, and I guess that's just the way it is. But it is alienating to somebody who just wants to get on and play a bit more casually. So it's something that I think 2K needs to take into account. I'd like to see more goodwill. We've said this before, but not just in the amount of VC that's awarded, although that's certainly an issue. But also just matchmaking and just making it a fairer experience, because at the moment it does have that sense of elitism, and you can say the whole get good crowd might make excuses and say, well, you know, you just suck at the game. But, I mean, maybe that's the case. But how do you get better? You do need to practice. And you need to practice and get that experience against people who have a similar skill level so that you can learn. And without that, it's just not a balanced title. But I do hope that is taken into account with 2K19. I hope that some of this negative feedback that 2K can look at that and realize that it's not just people hating, that there are a lot of valid criticisms that are about a game that's been easily the brand leader and a fantastic game for years, but 2K18 took several missteps that have been disappointing to see. So we'll see if that ends up having an impact. So last week we discussed the possibility of a new NBA Jam game. Tim Kitzrow, the legendary announcer of NBA Jam, got tongues wagging, I guess. People typing, making tweets, forum posts, whatnot, Reddit posts about the possibility of a new NBA Jam game. Now, there's a bit of a clarification to add here, because when he mentioned that a deal was in the works, I think we perhaps all jumped the gun, and I even in my first bulletin about it, I did say that this should not be taken of confirmation or anything. From the sounds of it, it doesn't seem like EA have got anything in pre-production at the moment, so maybe we are getting too excited about the possibility of EA making the game. EA do have the rights for NBA Jam at the moment, so it might be a matter of whether they are willing to publish the game and have somebody else develop it, whether there's interest in them providing the license and the rights to the NBA Jam name to another studio to develop, and then they just simply publish it. That remains to be seen. Obviously, it's something that they're in talks about, apparently. So at least there are talks about a Jam game somehow being made. Obviously, again, with the 25th anniversary of NBA Jam, there is also talk with Mark Tamell having that rare version with Michael Jordan and Gary Payton. We talked about that last week as well. The possibility of that being released, that's not going to happen unless they can get the rights to do that. And with Michael Jordan, I think, being an exclusive to 2K, that could be very difficult, to say the least. And of course, there's all other players that they need to do. This is why they don't do remakes and remasters of old sports games, because you have to license the players who were in the game at the time. As I mentioned in the last week's show, when they put NBA Live 95 for the Sega Genesis, or Mega Drive if you prefer, in NBA Live 06 on PS2, that was only in the NTSC release, incidentally. When they did that, they had to replace all the players in NBA Live 95 with fictional players, even players like Shaq, who were actually still in the league around the time of NBA Live 06. Obviously, they had to do that simply to avoid any issues with the license, because it was everything else was licensed. They could use the logos and everything, because that was still under the NBA license, but not any of the real players. So that's what holds back doing remakes and remasters of the old games with all the old players intact. I hope they can do it. I hope there's a new game. I'd love to see a new game. So if the deal can be worked out there, fantastic. And certainly, with all the hoops they need to jump through, if they can get that old version perhaps re-released and remastered, that would be something. But it should be noted that it's not that close to coming out. Maybe we took that initial tweet, we got a little bit carried away with that, so we should note, before we get too much further carried away with it, that a new NBA Jam game isn't imminent. It doesn't sound like EA is actually developing anything or that close to developing anything, but there are at least talks. So with it being the 25th anniversary, obviously that's a great opportunity to do something with the game. So we will see. Fingers crossed that something will come of it. As much fun as I had with NBA Playgrounds, I had my cousin visiting last week, and we played some NBA Playgrounds local co-op, and that was a lot of fun to do. And as much as we enjoyed it, that was on sale, and he went home and I believe has bought that on his PS4 as well now. So another fan there, and of course it's come out on Switch, the enhanced edition. But as much as I've had fun with NBA Playgrounds, it's still not quite NBA Jam, and I say that with all due respect to Playgrounds, which they've done, Sabre's done some great work on, and hopefully will continue to do great work on. But you know, the original NBA Jam and NBA Street games do stand in a class of their own as far as the arcade basketball games are concerned. So I'd like to see that it come back, and I mentioned that last week, and it's I guess it's a bit disappointing to have to temper our expectations for the moment and realize that there's nothing immediately in the works, but it's being talked about at least, so we may see it yet. And we'll of course keep uh, keep talking about that and keep on top of any news as it comes through. And Tim Kitzer did a fantastic talk with an interview, I should say, with Shaq News, where he's talking about his career in the gaming industry and how he got into being the announcer of NBA Jam and some of the things that happened when Midway lost the NBA Jam name and went to Hangtime, and Hangtime had Neil Funk as the announcer. So there's a lot of great story. If you love gaming, basketball games and gaming history, definitely a good read. I posted the link. If it's not in the forum, it's I posted the introduction for the Wayback Wednesday on the secret NBA Jam characters, secret characters in NBA Jam, so you can check that out. And I believe I retweeted as well, so if you follow us on Twitter, you can see it. Basically, check it out on Shaq News. It's a great read. So with the news, that's basically the news all done, I guess. So it's time to talk about, well, my week in basketball gaming.
Alley-oop! Oh, what a play!
It looks simple, but it's hard to execute.
So as I mentioned, I did play some NBA Playgrounds with my cousin when we were down. Very old school. We're both in our 30s now, but it was kind of old school to break out a basketball game and play that for a few hours as we hung out and chatted as he stayed with me overnight. Definitely a lot of fun doing that. Playing through the remaining tournaments that I got from the Hot and Frosty DLC, trying to go for some of the goals to unlock the extra basketballs and unlock extra players. Got a great pack with Dirk Nowitzki and LeBron James in it, so that was one of the best packs that I've pulled so far. Still a lot of players that I have to unlock. I'm still eyeing that to unlock all players DLC, because that is the drawback with Playgrounds, is that there's not a lot of replay value in the tournaments aside from trying for the extra goals for each game. And as Kenny has said in previous shows, It does seem like the game really works against you when you're trying to get that, probably because they're all gold-level players that you go against. And I'm not a big fan of having to level up all the players, especially how many there are in the game and how you've got to unlock them and then level them up. It's and how much XP it takes, especially when you replay it. So that is something I think that moving forward Saber needs to look at if they're going to make more NBA Playgrounds games. Certainly if there's a new NBA Jam game, I think they should avoid that mechanic altogether. But it was fun to play local co-op again, much more than just playing against the CPU by myself. You can counteract some of the cheesier moments from the AI when you've got a second human user there. So that was fun, and just these exciting moments of pulling off the win. And we had a couple of clutch victories where we ended up coming back from a deficit or just holding them off at the end there. And it was very nostalgic, I guess, to play an arcade game with my cousin. So that was a lot of fun. In the Monday tip-off, I mentioned playing NBA Live 18 Ultimate Team. I've been doing more of that, building up my team. This week's challenge was this week's fantasy challenge for the Legends Challenge is a Bulls Legends Challenge. So that was really cool to see. The players are, of course, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Horace Grant, and Tony Kukoc. Each week they release a pack. You can buy up to two packs of legends for the current legends that are available. If you complete the challenge, you get a short term legend. I did that. I got Horace Grant, but before that, I did actually buy two packs. I did drop some money. I was, and as I said in the Monday tip off, I was trying not to spend money, but I thought, well, I've already spent some money on 2K for a mode, my career, that I've come to not really enjoy. So I might as well support live and do that as well. And I would like to get that boost for my team. So I did that, and I got Tony Kukoc on the first pull and Scottie Pippen on the second. So I was really happy to get Scottie Pippen. I wanted to get him in Ultimate Team back in when I was really playing Ultimate Team a lot in Live 15 a few years back. Never was able to get him to be part of my 90s throwback team. So that was disappointing back in the day, but I've got Pippen, so already the mode feels very fulfilled for me this year. Starting to play some more games and it's fun to put this roster together, and I put some more money in there and bought a 2,800 NBA points. I ended up opening some 2-for-1 All Pro packs as well. So I've got a pretty strong team going at the moment, just to take on challenges and just playing through that mode. That's really what's keeping me hooked on Live 18 at the moment. Apart from some online gaming as well with the guys, which was fun. The only problem is with Scottie Pippen, it appears that he can't dunk. It seems there's a glitch there, so hopefully they can fix that without having to send through a new card or anything. So obviously Pippen should be throwing down some wicked tomahawks and whatnot, and at the moment he's just doing layups mostly, so that is something I hope they can fix on the card. But it is great to have him on the squad and build up the squad and start winning a few games. Have to take on some of the tougher challenges as well, including the League Heroes, where you actually have to use the full team. But I'm enjoying getting back into Ultimate Team. I've been meaning to do that for some time, so I'm finally doing that. Still looking to get some kind of franchise game going in live, or for that matter, in my league, in 2K18. Still, I've had to take a bit of a break from 2K18. Although we did play last week, as I said, we went to the playground. We ended up with the four of us: myself, Ben, the X, and ZZ Cool J. And we actually got onto the 2-on-2 court, and because there's no 4-on-4 this year, and ended up having the two NLC squads splitting up and going against each other, and the X and Ben just kind of wiped the floor with ZZ and I. Unfortunately, just the way it often goes with 2-on-2, it's if you can get a good run going, but it was fun to do all the same, but. We kind of got sick of that, so we ended up going to NBA Live 18, playing some live run. It was the four of us and a CPU player taking on the CPU in the live run exhibitions on the Battlefront court, which is back in the game for live run purposes. And it took us a while to really gel and get used to the game and some of the mechanics and working as a team again working as a team in Live 18 and not using some of the strategies that we've been using in the 2K18, 2K Pro-Am. I'm still having a lot of problems making jump shots in online. There seems to be a lot of lag with the jump shots. Smooth. Everything else is smooth except for jump shots in live run online. So that's still something that I'm working on. Maybe it's the animation I've got equipped at the moment. I have to double check who I've got for my the one player, but. Despite the fact we were losing a lot of games before we finally won a couple, and that was very satisfying when we started to really gel and won the game, won those two games at the end there, at the end of the session, there just didn't seem to be the same frustration that we've been having with 2K. And some of that's just the way it's set up, that you can immediately get into a game because it's against the CPU, because it does feel a bit more competitive because you're not going against the cheesy players and the cheesy maxed out players. It just didn't feel as frustrating. So even there were moments where I did feel a little bit frustrated, I suppose, but on the whole, I felt there was less profanity, less feeling of I'm just not having fun, which has unfortunately been the case with our online experiences with 2K, not so much offline, but certainly online this year, none of us have really had that enjoyment, but it was there in live, so I'm actually looking forward to getting on and playing a few more live games, and maybe it is just taking a break from 2K. Having played a lot of 2K from 2K17, well, I guess towards the end of the life cycle of 2K16, right through to 2K17 last year, and now 2K18, we're maybe a bit burned out on it, and not necessarily happy with some of the changes as we've said. So taking that break has definitely helped freshen things up, and it's good to have that alternative, which is why there needs to be at least two viable options on the market in Live 18. Live in general still has a long way to go, but it's making those strides. And if we can have those two competitive games and viable options, then if you do get sick of one game, being able to go over to the other one and get your fix, that's obviously what we want to have. So for people who want Live to just give up, first of all, it's making strides, so it shouldn't give up now. But it's just not to have that one game on the market, especially when you consider some of the issues that I mentioned. The MMOification that I was talking about earlier about 2K18, you definitely don't want to have one game, and you don't want to have just live either. You don't want 2K to go away. You don't want live to go away. Really, if you want both games to be as good as they can be, you want to have another game on the market. But Live 18 has been fun. It's been nice to take a break from 2K18. I don't think I'll not go back to 2K18. I'm sure there'll be times when we get. Maybe give online a try, and certainly again, maybe look at my league, a bit of my team as well, with Ultimate Team rekindling my interest in the team building modes. So why not, you know? And of course, NBA Playgrounds is there, and bevy of retro gaming options. But at the moment, I feel the rotation is pretty solid. I've got the modes that I want to play, and certainly team up with the other guys. And it was nice to get online because the previous week we didn't play anything at all. because we were sick of 2K Pro Am, so we just didn't play anything, didn't get online, and it's a big part of that experience is the social aspect of getting online and chatting with the guys and making jokes and talking real basketball, of course, while we play some virtual basketball. So I did miss that the week before, and Exeter did suggest, messaged us and said, hey, you know, let's play some, let's play a game tonight. And we tried 2K18 first and then went to Live 18. And again, having the two options, that's what's been so beneficial, I guess. And, before we wrap that up, do want to mention, before I wrap it up, I should say, used to saying we, but I'm looking around. Of course, no one in the room with me. We do this over Skype normally, but it's just me, as you can tell, and hopefully it's not been too bad so far. But to wrap up my week in basketball gaming, I've also been doing a little bit more modding. I've been working on the Ultimate Jordan roster for NBA Live 08. It's a project I started a few years ago, just in messing around here and there with beta releases and a couple of demo releases. I'm getting closer to perhaps putting out another release. I've been working on some ratings, Michael Jordan's ratings, first pass of all the incarnations of Jordan year by year and all his dunk packages, fixed up all the bio data, fixed up a few things with art placement this week. I'd noticed that, for example, the 93 Bulls use the same jerseys as the 96 Bulls, but they're still using the old Chicago Stadium, so I had to change copy and change around some art files and art pointers to the art files. And the same with the 1986 Bulls, which use the same jerseys as that the Bulls use up to around about 1992, but still use the same stadium, the same version of Chicago Stadium as the 85 Bulls, the rookie Jordan's rookie year. So again, just for some accuracy that I want to do there, make it as accurate as possible. And there's still some art files to change around and players to create and whatnot. But I'm looking, it's starting to really take shape, and I feel once I can do that, there'll be a fairly, not easy, but fairly straightforward in some respects to do a conversion to NBA Live 2005 to 07, which is what I want to do, because it's pretty easy to convert rosters between 05 and 08, and you start with 08 and go backwards. I found that's the easiest way to do it. I have been tinkering with a current roster as well, and for both 2K18 and Live 05 to 2005 to 08. I don't want to make any official announcements or anything like that. I don't know if that's something I'm going to be able to do. I do miss it sometimes, though, which is why I wanted to give it a go and just see if I could do it rather efficiently. I've done some preliminary work, just tinkering, just to see, and I still see some people doing projects for 2K11 and the last few NBA Live on PC releases. So certainly looking forward to just seeing if I can do something with that. But at the moment, the Jordan roster, because that's actually more fully formed, and it's something I want to do. And at this stage, I mean, I've been modding for, well, 20 years now, I guess, first started into that around about 97, 98. These days, I just mod if there's something that I want to do, if there's something that takes my interest, because it's something you do get very burned out on after a while. So I have... That is what I'm working on at the moment, is the Jordan roster. It's inspired, obviously, by the Jordan Challenge in NBA 2K11 originally, and all the historical teams that have been released since. And of course, NBA's greatest, NBA 2K12. So it is something that I want to do and just get out there, because, and obviously, it's the nostalgia factor for me as well, being the era that I grew up with. So if I can get that out, especially since I started it and put out a couple of beta releases, I really like that. I wanted to do it last year, things got in the way. But yeah, so I'm looking to do a little bit of modding here and there, just to keep things fresh. And of course, I do my all the other content that I produce during the week that gets in the way, as well as work and other responsibilities. But it is fun to get back into a little bit of modding. While I'm on the subject of modding, I do want to talk about this more in a written feature, as I know not everyone listens to the podcast, and I do want it there for easy access as well. But it's been brought up in the forum that there's been a bit of a shift in the modding community in recent years, a bit more of toxicity, competitiveness, a bit of wanting to toxic one-upmanship, I suppose, and people being in it for themselves and not really for the community. And there has been a bit of that. There's a lot of use of ad links these days. We're making people jump through a lot of ad links hoops just to get to files, password protecting files, refusal to collaborate, and I guess just basic negative interactions between the community. Just either modders not being necessarily very nice to their audience, the audience not being very nice to the modders, being very demanding about that. Modders not being very friendly towards each other, and that's something we need to stamp out. And it's, I know there's a lot of problems with, I consider it a problem. People taking work and re-releasing it and taking techniques and that from people and sometimes even work and re-releasing it in these private Facebook groups and whatnot, and sometimes even charging money for it, making money off other people's work, or simply just having this exclusiveness that our community was not built on, and that our community would not still be here if we had that attitude for all these years. So it's a shame to see, and I do think that, at least for our community, there's not much we can do about stuff that happens off-site that's outside our jurisdiction. They're going to do what they're going to do, not much we can do about it. But at least for our community, I think we can be friendly to each other, in general, in discussions in general, but certainly within the modding community, having that that friendliness, that willingness to collaborate and help each other, making mods because we want to do cool stuff with the game and share it with our fellow gamers, and doing that rather than trying to make money, because obviously we can't charge for mods directly, because there's a lot of legal problems we could get into, and certainly from an ethical, moral standpoint, it's not what our community was built on. So, I mean, we've talked about it before. I've written articles back in the day. John Jasmine wrote a lot of articles and has mentioned in the forum as well. But it's really about modding for the right reason, and that is to share some great work with your fellow gamers and to do something cool and a creative outlet. And look, if you want to have some ad links or a tip jar, that's fair enough. But, you know, we've had a lot of people upload to free hosts and use the ad links and add it to our download section, and I've had to remove those files because the files have been removed from the free host because they're just temporary file sharing services, not proper hosting. So, and that's a shame to have to lose those files and get those broken download reports because people have been using the ad links and Mediafire in conjunction with one another, and we've just ended up losing the files. Certainly, you know, let's cut out the toxicity. Let's support each other. Let's do some great work. There has been this attitude shift, and I would like to see us set a better example. The contributors and the leaders in the modding community basically setting a better example for everyone else and showing, hey, you know, this is something we do for fun, for each other, and basically helping each other out. And we do have a great thing going with our modding community. Still lots of work, great work being made, and the new versions of the UR Basketball mod for NBA 2K13 and NBA 2K14 have just come out. You may have seen the Filelicious Bulletins by now, and keeping those games up to date with current rosters. Also, I think it's 60 seasons now, at least 60 seasons for each mod as well, going back with the retro rosters and also other special rosters, including the new elite rosters. So lots of great stuff still being done, but there are times when I think we can treat each other better as a community and certainly not do this stuff where we're trying to turn it into profiting off modding and making it all about money and making it all about ourselves and ego and everything like that. And most of the people in the community are just fine. It's just a few that are not treating each other with respect. So certainly, you know, when you see a great mod like URB put out there, you know, but by all means, a kind word goes a long way, basically. And if there are any issues, you know, constructive feedback and politeness goes a long way as well. So just treat each other better and let's mod for the right reasons. Let's not get caught up in politics and trying to make money off intellectual property that is not our own. For a start, we could get in a lot of trouble that way. That's how we'll get shut down. So definitely don't be doing that. And whatever happens off-site is gonna happen. But we can make our modding community as friendly as possible and as productive and constructive as possible. So by all means, let's do that. And yeah, you know, it's something that I guess if we have to crack down on incidents, that's what we're going to have to do as moderators in the forum and admins. But yeah, let's not let it come to that. Let's all set a good example for one another and continue to produce some great work. Before I wrap up this solo edition of the NLRC podcast, just want to touch very briefly on the All-Star Weekend. We do know the starters now. They've been selected in the East and the West, although the top vote getters, Stephen Curry in the West and LeBron James in the East, they will actually be the captains, and they get to select any starters from the East and West who have been selected. So the selection process starts with the way it used to, with the East and the West, and then it becomes mixed. That's the new format that they're trying this year, and I'm hoping that it will shake up the All-Star game and make it more competitive. LeBron James has come out with comments saying that the All-Star game the last few years hasn't been what it should be, and I'm not the biggest fan of LeBron James, as you may know, but certainly respect him as a player, and I think he's right on the money with that one. That the game has not been what it should be the last few years, and he's pledged to pick his team the way that the way that it's in a way that makes it competitive. Basically, he's looking to win this game and make it competitive again. It's definitely going to be interesting to see. Especially with Kyrie Irving making it in the East, so the East, the Eastern starters, that is who has been voted in for the East to be selected: LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, and DeMar DeRozan. So, whether it'll be interesting to see whether LeBron would pick a Kyrie Irving, he can pick anyone, I guess, except Stephen Curry whoever Stephen Curry picks, of course. In the West, it's Stephen Curry. James Harden joins him as the who was voted in the backcourt. The Pelicans' big front court of Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins and Kevin Durant, so two Warriors there is often the case. I am hoping that it's a more competitive game this year. I know that it's not. A lot of people say, "Oh, it's just for fun. It's just the All-Star game." But you go back and look at those old games, as I've said in previous shows, and there was more competition and more effort being put in. And I thought Scott Van Pelt of ESPN, his take last year was very poignant, very on the money, where he said that it takes a lot to make the greatest athletes in the world, certainly the greatest athletes in basketball, doing amazing things look boring. But with the game turning into layup lines and standing back and not even giving the effort on defense and just basically making it into a shootout, it's all these highlights don't really mean anything because they're just standing back and letting them happen. Whereas back in the day when Shaq dunked on David Robinson, the 1996 game, and in San Antonio, no less, and it was really exciting because they were putting in an effort. I mean, it was a bit looser. It's not a playoff atmosphere, and as Scott Van Pelt said, you don't want them to insult their intelligence by acting like it's that serious. But just bringing a bit more seriousness to the game, no more of this lying down and letting people take threes over you and just not even trying. It's because it's become a farce. Instead of being this great exhibition of basketball, it's become, again, a farce. It's become not even a competitive game. No semblance of actually being an organized game of basketball. Just run it up and jack threes or stand aside and let them dunk very easily. I mean, there's room to not to let the occasional dunk go through. But again, like the Shaq dunk on David Robinson, or the first time that Tracy McGrady pulled out his off the backboard alley-oop to himself, it just came in the middle of in the thick of people actually trying to play the game, and they were just caught off guard. But what made it spectacular was that there was some effort there, and it was competitive, and now it's not, and it's made a lot of the scoring records in recent games look very artificial and inflated because no one's been trying; they've just been standing back and letting each other shoot. The highlights have just been boring because it's every play is the players just trying to do something cool, and instead of just being this ultimate pickup game, it's basically been a lackadaisical shoot around. So I've spoken on that at length in the forum and on previous podcasts. I'm hoping that this year that the change in format and the change in attitude, I think a lot of people have the backlash last year was a lot bigger than ever before. I think people noticed how far the All-Star game had drifted, and I think Chris Paul, watching the game last year, made the comments that he wasn't particularly happy with how it is. And, of course, he's been involved. He's been an All-Star for going back over a decade now, so he knows what it used to be like. It's really only been the last few years it's been like this. So I'm hoping that the changes will actually have an effect on that. And I'm optimistic. And I found myself shooting out of the game the last few years, especially when it's devolved into it. I think after 2016 was the first year I just stopped watching. I couldn't even make it to the end, and last year was the same thing. So it's I want to give it another chance. And if it's going to be the same thing, then obviously I need to accept that, hey, maybe the All-Star game has moved away from what it was when I was growing up and what it was for most of the 80s and 90s. And even really, even up until 2010, even up to as late as around 2012, 2013, it was still that semblance to that old competitiveness. And now these past few years have just been a farce. That it's something that I may have to accept, but it does sound like they want to make it a more competitive game again and changing it up with this format. I'm still a little bit iffy on the format, but hey, if it works out, that's the main thing at the end of the day. So I'm willing to give it one more shot and see if it's a bit more like the All-Star games that I loved so much growing up. And if so, you know, hopefully it's so much the better, basically, if it turns out that way, that it's entertaining again and that the highlights mean something and are more spectacular and impressive because they've come at the in the middle of a game that players are actually trying. So we will see, and I guess in the next couple of weeks the reserves are going to be selected and announced as well, and from there we'll see what kind of teams are made up with the new captain's approach. So that brings us to the end of this rather odd solo podcast, the solo edition of the NLRC podcast, I should say, episode number 233. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it wasn't too monotonous listening to me. Did want to get a show out this week, as I said. If you do enjoy the NLRC podcast this week or in general, I encourage you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also find us on the Stitcher app for Android and iOS devices. Just search for NLRC podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. As long as you're tuning in, that's the main thing. Or you can keep streaming it on the NLRC itself, of course, where we post it each and every week. Again, that's why I wanted to get one out this week, despite my co-host being unavailable this week. Didn't want to miss it, especially since we missed so many episodes last week. And hey, maybe I wanted to experiment with a monologue. I guess egotistically, I wanted to give it a go. So, again, hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in each and every week if you generally like the NLRC podcast. You can also connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter, at the NLSC. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. We're on Instagram, trying to post there a little bit more. I do neglect it because I've got to log in on my phone rather than just quickly upload something to Facebook or Twitter via the desktop or laptop. But that's NLSC Basketball on Instagram if you want to follow us there. But hit us up on social media, connect with us. You can always get in touch with us that way. Post our updates on there as well, and it's a way to get in touch with us. And of course, keep it locked to the NLRC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games, the podcasts, the articles, the videos. Want to get some more videos going this year. It was fun to do a couple of those towards the end of last year. Of course, our modding community and any news that we cover as well. We're all about basketball games, so if you're about basketball games, keep it locked to the NLRC, nba-live.com. So until next week, I'm Andrew, and hopefully you'll have some other voices next time.